The American desire to go west, young man, started back when President Thomas Jefferson and Indiana Territorial Governor William Henry Harrison secured tens of millions of acres from the indigenous tribes who lived there. It was the old Northwest Territory. You might say it was a bargain, or you could say it was a steal. They made land available at low cost for hardworking settlers to establish farms and communities out in the wilderness, expanding west of Pennsylvania and Virginia. Shawnee warrior Tecumseh attempted to organize Native tribes in the region that we know now as Ohio, to oppose the expansion. His battles against Harrison's forces would become frequent and legendary. Author Peter Stark suggests that the tensions between the competing communities Harrison and Tecumseh represented in the early 19th century may still be playing out today in the underlying friction that seems to still haunt the United States of America. Peter joins us now to give us an insight into Tecumseh and Tippecanoe and Tyler II, William Henry Harrison. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rick.
So William Henry Harrison and Tecumseh. You know, I only know Harrison as the president who died after 1 month of his inauguration, and he had that catchy campaign slogan, Tippecanoe and Tyler II. And Tecumseh was a great Indian warrior, but I don't know anything more than that. Just in a nutshell, who were they, and why do they matter in American history, especially today?
Well, Harrison is what I call he's known as a bar trivia joke, the answer to a bar trivia joke. Who had the shortest term as U.S. president? Harrison, 1 month. He died after 1 month in office in his late 60s. But when he was in his 20s and 30s, as a young man on the Western frontier, as an Indian fighter, and then as a territorial politician, he was extremely influential in what we became as a nation. And partly he did it by convincing Congress as a young man to sell land rather than in huge chunks to Eastern investors, to sell it in little pieces to poor white guys so they could buy it on credit and start their own homesteads.
Huh.
Meanwhile, Tecumseh was a guy who came from a long line of Shawnee warriors. And his dad died when Tecumseh was six. His dad died fighting the Virginia British soldiers coming over the mountains to defend white settlers who had come over the mountains. These are the Appalachian Mountains, not the Rockies. The Appalachians come from the eastern seaboard over the mountains into the Ohio Valley to settle illegally. And so tensions and fighting erupted between Shawnee and Cherokees and these early Virginia settlers, and the British governor of Virginia sent soldiers over. A large group of Shawnees went to fight them. Tecumseh's father was one of those guys, and he died fighting them. And he, in his dying words, told his sons, uphold the family honor as warriors and never give in to the whites. And so Tecumseh eventually unified tribes from Lake Superior to the Gulf of Mexico to hold the land as one unit, so that the U.S. forces could not splinter the tribes or splinter chiefs apart and take the land that way. And so Tecumseh and Harrison ended up running up against each other.
What a thrilling story, and what a great sort of basis for your book, Gallop Toward the Sun, Tecumseh and William Henry Harrison's Struggle for the Destiny of a Nation, to think that there was this great rivalry between a future American president and a great Shawnee chief. By the way, you used the term Indian a few moments ago, and you're a scholar who studied this, and you didn't do that accidentally. These days, we're being very, very careful about privileged white people speaking respectfully of people who have been mistreated historically and so on. And we don't want to be thoughtless, but I also think we don't want to go overboard. What is your take on using the term Indian?
Well, there is this kind of spreading in the culture to a certain degree that it's somehow a derogatory term, which it is not. And Indians call themselves Indians. And there are many different terms, you know, Native Americans, indigenous people, there are so many different terms, tribal members. I mean, basically, I use the term Indian and Native and indigenous people and tribal members interchangeably. The preferred way, I mean, for Native Americans, is that you name them by their tribe. So you say, you know, a Shawnee hunter. Generally, that's the best direction to head. But to say Indian is derogatory, it's just not the case. And it's very commonly accepted to use in historical context anyway.
So when I read your book, what I'm really struck by is by the nature of our way of doing history. We don't really paint Indian cultures or Native American cultures with a lot of respect. And Tecumseh was able to travel, like you said, from Minnesota to Florida and unite people of different tribes. That's just mind-blowing. I cannot imagine the hurdles that he faced organizing all of these disparate tribes and actually then partnering with Britain so they could unite and try to stop the westward movement of the United States.
Yeah, well, it's a remarkable feat, and he was a remarkable orator and diplomat and also a remarkable warrior and leader, charismatic guy. I'd bring up the analogy that I think, you know, as we as modern Americans of you know, mostly European descent, but think of the tribes hundreds of years ago as, you know, like, okay, there's some village sitting around a campfire up this way, and then another village around a campfire 200 miles away, and there's nothing in between, and they're not connected in any way. That was not the case at all. There was so much connection and intermovement among tribes and communication. I compare the tribes of like today's Ohio Valley, you know, the whole center of the continent, which I've studied quite extensively. Sometimes I compare it to, you know, think of Europe in like 1500 and think of all the little, the principalities.
I was going to say Europe is a bunch of kingdoms. Europe is tribes.
It's tribes, yeah. Every which way. And think of it, 1500, you know, that there weren't big nations. There were all these different entities and they had all different alliances. And some were at war with each other. Some were, in alliances with each other. The same thing was true of North American Indians. Exactly the same thing. So for Tecumseh to organize these tribes was not all that unusual.
And some of these tribal people made a career, I suppose, out of learning the other tribe's language so they could translate.
Oh, very much. I mean, and they didn't even have to make a point. They grew up in a lot of cases with several different languages.
It's exciting to open our minds to this. Now, have you thought in your studies, Peter, how history might have been different if Tecumseh had actually succeeded?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Tecumseh had succeeded, you know, the U.S. might end today about Columbus, Ohio. And west of Columbus would be what the British wanted to call the Indian barrier state. So the entire Midwest, from what's now Canada down to the Gulf of Mexico, would be a state where neither European power nor the U.S. had any control whatsoever. It was in the hands of the tribes. And then west of the Indian barrier state, across the Mississippi River or farther west than that, you know, that was just sort of like out there, left alone. You know, the Spain could claim it. So the U.S. could have ended at Columbus. And if Tecumseh had succeeded, another thing that I think about is that our attitude towards both the earth itself and the conservation of the earth itself and preserving its bounty would be very different. And our attitude towards people who are not like us, towards, you know, whatever, people of color, different cultures, would be much more embracing with wider arms, because that would be so much part of what the United States was early on. But it didn't happen that way.
It might have tempered our capitalism also.
Yes, great point. The native societies, the different tribes, were not always, but very much community-oriented, sharing. If you're a hunting mm-hmm. tribe, you know, you come in with an animal one day and mm-hmm. you might not have another animal for 2 months. So you have to share the animal with your villager friends and family so they'll share with you. And so there's a very much a community orientation.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're joined by Peter Stark. He's highlighting the ongoing battles between William Henry Harrison and Shawnee Chief Tecumseh in his book. It's called Gallop Toward the Sun, Tecumseh and William Henry Harrison's Struggle for the Destiny of a Nation. You can learn more about Peter's work at his website. It's simply peterstarkauthor.com. Peter, you suggest that the tensions between Harrison and Tecumseh back in the early 19th century, those tensions may still be playing out today as we have a divided society here in the United States. How so?
Well, I think those two characters, I chose them because they do embody two dynamics early in our country's founding. And our country made choices. Unfortunately, those choices were often by default. And the choices were not to recognize, for instance, tribal land rights and take land from tribes every which way the U.S. could. And that is playing out today in our attitudes towards minority people, towards whether it's Native Americans or people of color. We don't acknowledge, in the case of Native Americans, what they underwent. They lost 95% of their land. And we have to acknowledge that as part of our history. And it's not like we have to celebrate it, but we need to acknowledge it in order to bring those people closer to us.
Now, Peter, if somebody reads your book, Gallop Toward the Sun, they may well be inspired to visit some of these places in the Ohio Valley and the Great Lakes region that are connected to Harrison and Tecumseh. Can you just take the last couple minutes of our talk here and talk about three or four of the places that we might want to actually visit on a vacation as we travel around that part of the United States?
Well, so much of what unfolded between William Henry Harrison and Tecumseh unfolded in what's not, you know, known as travel destination country, the Midwest, the Ohio Valley. But there's some really cool places. One of the most remarkable residences in the U.S., in my mind, is the Grouseland residence in Vincennes, Indiana, which was what Harrison and his wife Nancy built in 1802, when it was then way at the fringe of the wilderness. And it's essentially, Harrison was the sixth generation of an old Virginia plantation family. So he designed, when he was territorial governor, and he was about to take 30 million acres of land from the tribes, he designed this house, this like this elegant Virginia mansion on the upper floors, you know, the main floors, with parlors and dining rooms. And there were little sparkles in the dining room walls so the candlelight would reflect. And, you know, just total elegance upstairs. The foyer is designed after Mount Vernon and blah, blah, blah. And then you go in the cellar and it's a fortress. It's 2 foot thick stone walls with gun ports. There's a gunpowder magazine. There's an in the cellar well. There's its own kitchens. So it's a self-contained fortress with an elegant plantation sitting room on top of it.
Okay, so that's Grouseland. It's William Henry Harrison's mansion, Vincennes, Indiana. It goes back to 1802. What's another site we might want to think of?
Some of the battle sites are really interesting. The Battle of Tippecanoe, that was 1811, November of 1811. That's a really interesting place to visit. It's near Lafayette, Indiana, which is the home of Purdue University. And that's a very well-preserved site. That there's a great museum there. And there's also a state park that has some reproductions of the Indian village that was there. That Tippecanoe area was the epicenter of Tecumseh and his brothers, the prophets. Their main headquarters was there.
And you wrote about a very interesting battle called the Battle with No Name. There's actually a battlefield.
Oh, yeah. You want to go obscure. You want to go to some obscure traveling. See if I can get the name of the town right. It was called Fort Recovery, and I think it's Ohio. And it's a beautiful farm country, and it's this little teeny town. And it was where in 1791, George Washington, president for 2 years, sends that not even an army, it's kind of the prototype of the army, this ragtag collection of soldiers to go into the Ohio Valley and go punish the Shawnee banditti in the Ohio Valley. And this big force of Washington's gets completely annihilated by the Confederated tribes, Shawnee, Miami, Potawatomi, at this site, this particular rise of land along, I'm spacing out the name of the river, it's along one of those Ohio rivers, and that site is now this little town. But this defeat was so humiliating, it got swept under the rug of American history and never got a name. So it's known as the Battle with No Name. And, you know, people talk about the Battle of the Little Bighorn or, you know, Custer's Last Stand, same thing, as being this huge defeat of U.S. forces. Well, like 200 soldiers and officers died in the Battle of the Little Bighorn. And this went 600 to 700 soldiers and officers died and a number of civilians. It was this incredible rout. The survivors sprinted for 100 miles over 2 or 3 days to get to the safety of Fort Washington at what's now Cincinnati.
Wow. Peter Stark, of all of these places that go back to the early 1800s, what's a fort, a military fort, that is your favorite from this time period?
One of my favorite places from this time period, it's not in the Ohio Valley, but it's up in the Great Lakes, in the upper Great Lakes, called Mackinac Island. And it's this beautiful, beautiful island. And it was an Indian trading center for centuries, probably thousands of years. And then it became a French trading post and a fur trapper trading post. And then it became a fort. And it played an instrumental role in the War of 1812 and these battles that Tecumseh was involved in, not that particular one at Fort Mackinac. But it's a really beautiful place to visit. And it was, it still is to some degree, but for a long time, it was sort of like the, you know, the Newport of, you know, Newport, Rhode Island, where the big summer mansions were of the New York barons. Mackinac Island was, sometimes they called it the Newport of the Midwest. And, you know, the big barons of Detroit and Chicago would have their summer places there because it's this beautiful island kind of between Lake Superior and Lake Huron.
Peter Stark's latest book is Gallop Toward the Sun, Tecumseh and William Henry Harrison's Struggle for the Destiny of a Nation. In it, he examines the rivalry between these two influential early Americans and how they set a pattern for a growing United States. Peter's a longtime correspondent for Outside Magazine and an adventure writer and historian. He's joining us from his home in Montana right now on Travel with Rick Steves. His bestseller, Astoria, has been adapted into a two-part play. His website is peterstarkauthor.com. Peter, when we're thinking about Tecumseh, what's your takeaway from this guy? I mean, it's just, we are so wired not to appreciate these great Native American statespeople. Can you call them statespeople? Tribal people. I mean, people that really were leaders in their day. We don't understand.
Or tribal diplomats. I think of him as a tribal diplomat.
I mean, we have Chief Joseph up here in the Northwest. We know Chief Joseph, and you know Tecumseh.
Yeah, Tecumseh's name has kind of been lost, unless you are from that area directly. And that he, in the 1900s, or the 1800s, was considered by historians then as the greatest Indian leader who ever lived. You know, and this is during the time of Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse. And yet he's kind of slipped off the screen for some reason, yet he was so remarkable as a leader, as a statesman, as you say, a tribal diplomat, in unifying people, in bringing people towards him. And he was a fun-loving guy. He was really fun. He was smart. He was kind. And he was a fierce warrior.
And it sounds like he was a rare Native American leader who transcended tribal identity. He became a folk hero among Indians.
He became a folk hero among Indians, but also among whites. And so the way his name lives on today is William Tecumseh Sherman, in one sense. And William Tecumseh Sherman's dad lived in that region during the time of Tecumseh's, you know, ascendancy, and was a huge admirer of Tecumseh. So he
wanted
to name.
You're talking Sherman, the Civil War.
Civil War general. Yeah, the famous Civil War general.
Named after an Indian hero.
Well, there was a problem there because Sherman's old man wanted to name him Tecumseh Sherman. And then, as the story goes, the Baptist minister who was baptizing him said, no, you can't have a pagan name for a first name. We're going to name him William, and you can stick with Tecumseh for a middle name. So it's William Tecumseh Sherman.
Wow. You could get away with that today, and nobody would complain.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it would work. It would work.
Hey, Peter Stark, thank you so much. One of the great joys of my work in this show is to talk to people like you who are passionate about something that I didn't know you could be passionate about, frankly, and to realize this world is filled with interesting stories and people who know how to tell them. And mostly, thanks for shining a light on this amazing Shawnee chief, Tecumseh, who even William Henry Harrison called a genius. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
Take care.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Website uploads are managed by Andrew Wakeling. Jerry Frank wrote and performed our theme music. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.